Hi, it's Mike. It's Saturday, and it's the Saturday Show. So today we're going to bring you let me explain the premise first. We bring you one of the best of the week that just was, and one of the best of the week that will be. No, that's not really it. One of the best of the weeks past. Wait, let me go back and give you more of the premise of the Saturday Show. So there are weeks, 7-day weeks. These were divided as such by the ancient Babylonians. I believe it was King Sargon I who decided. No, all right. So David Chen was, I have to filibuster because our best of the week is only 6 minutes and it didn't air during the week. It's brand new content from Sir David Chen. We were talking about carbon capture and I wanted to know what he thought about gluing, the spate of gluings as political protest. I had to orient him a little bit, but I got him to talk about if gluings for good were really for the greater good. And then we talked a little bit about Greta Thunberg, which reminded me, so that's about 6 minutes. I think you'll enjoy any more David King, those dolorous tones. I say, give me that, sir. I'm glued. My ears are all glue. Wait, I'm glued. My ears are glued to the radio. Is that the idiom? Let's say it is. But then thinking of Greta Thunberg, I thought of an interview that I did with Katie Lederer. The year was 2019. It was September. And Katie, a friend of mine, who writes about the environment and thinks about things like morality, motherhood, she talked to me about Greta Thunberg, why Greta is such a force, and if Greta will actually bring about any change. You can read Lederer's piece on Thunberg in N+1. I don't know, but I think this might be the only conversation I had about an N+1 piece, which if you don't know what N+1 is, that's the way they want to keep it. They're better than you and smarter than you, although Katie Lederer is quite accessible, as is the spate of gluings. Enjoy both of these segments. Winter, where I'm from, is not over. But I look at the bright side. I call it soup season. And I try to get all the ingredients, source the ingredients, master my recipe. And as I'm doing that, getting cash back on the purchases I make with Ibotta. Ibotta is the free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries, spices, and stock to beauty supplies to toys. You beat inflation no matter what you're purchasing. Your average Ibotta user earns $145 a year. Don't you want $145 a year? You know what it costs you? It costs you nothing to use the app, Ibotta. Get in on that. Other apps give you points that don't amount to much. With Ibotta, you just add your offers in the app, you upload your receipt, and then you get real cash that you can cash out to your bank account or PayPal or gift cards. Join the over 50 million savers and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers, including Lowe's, Macy's, Sephora, Best Buy, and more. Right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5, wow, just for trying Ibotta by using the code THEGIST when you register. This is free money upon free money. Go to the App Store or Google Play, download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use the code THEGIST, that's Ibotta, in the Google Play or App Store, and use the code THEGIST. It will help you, it will help the show, and the soup you might make can help you, you know, clear up those block sinuses.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. we'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
There is a tension between emphasizing the dire state that we're in. And I have seen you quoted saying, if we don't massively improve the situation, we're doomed. And that, however, you don't want to veer into all is lost, it is hopeless. You want to allow people to have hope, but also emphasize how dire things are. In our conversation, I hear you towing that line. What about other popular expressions about the climate crisis? Do you think people gluing themselves to artworks serves a positive function? Do you think that Greta Thunberg's overall message and her Cassandra-type affect is the best way to communicate to the public? How do you go about looking at what is the right tone to strike in terms of doomerism versus optimism?
So first of all, let me just say what I mean by doomerism. So if you think I'm a doomist, I do think the human population will continue, right? But at what population level? 8 billion today, heading towards 10 billion. How many of those will survive this catastrophe that lies ahead of us if we don't manage it? Well, it might be a billion, but the process in getting down to that level is disastrous. So that's a terrible message for my granddaughter, my youngest granddaughter's 4 years old. What sort of a life can she see just ahead of her, let alone her children, etc.? Any time I put that story across, I will also put the strategy across how we manage this. We can manage this. We can manage a safe passageway for humanity going forward. But what we need is a much clearer understanding of the need for this strategy, the 4R strategy that I've been talking about. We need not just an understanding, but actions to flow from that. We've been very, very good at the COP meetings since 1992, discussing endlessly details. Read the document and you'll see the language. It's very depressing. But what we haven't done is follow up with positive actions. And now we're at a point in time where positive actions have to flow through.
And so what about gluings and Greta?
So I think Greta, for example, I think, isn't it wonderful that this young girl standing outside the Swedish parliament actually managed to get her voice across? And she is an extraordinarily articulate person. But Greta is surrounded by a group of people who are saying, we must simply reduce emissions deeply and rapidly, full stop. She's against any other form of technology. Now, it does need a greater understanding of the real situation we're in today to realize why we need these other strategies. So I'm a great fan of Greta's, but at the same time, I wish I could have got to her before these others.
And the gluings? You know of the gluings. They happen in London.
The gluings?
Yes, people gluing themselves to artwork in the name of climate crisis.
Yeah. The gluings, they did that. I know one of the very brave women, I say brave women, who glued their feet to the top of underground coach in our underground railway line. If that train had taken off, they wouldn't have survived. Now, let me tell you, these people are upper middle class people who are really concerned. This is not the poorest people in our society. These are very concerned people. So I think it's extraordinary what they're doing, but at the same time, I'm not supporting them. However, I have been into courts to defend them on the grounds that we have a major crisis. And this means anything we can do to raise the level of understanding of the level of the crisis is a good idea. but I wouldn't go that far myself.
Well, you don't think it turns people off? Threatening works of art that are not at all implicated, and in fact, were perhaps in some cases drawn, illustrated, and painted before there was even an industrial revolution?
Mike, I'm totally with you there. I wouldn't defend. I'm very fond of the arts, and I'm an art collector myself. And the last thing I want to see is the destruction of our great heritage of wonderful art pieces. When I talked to the people who did that, they were saying they focused on paintings that were covered with glass. They really were keen.
Yes,
not
they do it to the frames. Yes, they say, yes. You know, your hand could slip. And glue is also in some cases made from petrol. So that itself is perhaps not the.
I would hope they would use a water-based glue.
They should. That should be. That's excellent advice.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
This episode is brought to you by The Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about The Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort, and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters in hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Greta Thunberg, who is the 16-year-old Swedish child who spoke to the UN, spoke is nice. She kind of yelled at the UN. But you know what? They deserved it, if you think of the UN as the collective will of the nations and leaders of the world. On the show in the past, I have likened her to an Old Testament prophet. She's actually two strains of the Bible. She's both Jeremiah and the Children's Crusade. I've been thinking a lot about her. So has everyone. That's the extent that she's arrested the conversation. And joining me now is Katie Lederer, who writes about the environment and other issues as a columnist for N+1. But Katie sits at these great cross currents of literature and environmentalism and parenting. And she taught a course at Columbia about the literature of environmentalism. And she's written about Greta. Thanks for coming in, Katie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Had you seen Greta talk in that way before? Because I know you've been following her career meteoric rise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was definitely the most angry I've seen her. I was trying to figure that out because when I watched the speech initially, I was a little bit shocked. I am a fan of her delivery.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little intense, but I have to say, I kept watching the speeches that followed, and as I said on Twitter, she kind of poured acid on those speeches. And
much like an industrial polluter might,
well,
to a beautiful
stream. It did what I think she wanted it to do. So I kind of came around.
So is that, I mean, you can't look away. There's something about this compelling, extremely well-spoken, extremely passionate girl saying these things, embodying the cost of our environmental decline. Are there any risks? I mean, I've been reading some people, I don't know if they are of goodwill, but they think they're making fair points, saying if she becomes the face of the movement could be, in fact, harming itself. She's so scorched earth.
I feel like what Greta Thunberg kind of gets at is that we have been, for 30 years, intelligent people have been discussing, I mean, their entire think tanks around how to communicate mm-hmm. about climate change, right? And there's going to be an official or a group using every mode. So, you know, Extinction Rebellion is more doing maybe what she, you know, that tone that she has. But you have like NRDC doing a more friendly tone.
Yes.
And None of it's worked.
And when I spoke to Al Gore, he said, you know, the key is you got to give people hope. That's how the second iteration of the documentary ends. It's all about hope. And there's a lot of research and scholarship that says hope's really important. Without hope, you're not going to get change. And then she says in the speech,
I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you?
Well, so I feel like I don't want to say charm, that's not quite the right word, but the effectiveness of her. One, whatever's been done has not worked for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's like a starting point. She's trying whatever she's trying. She's trying what she's comfortable with. You know, she went out there in front of Swedish Parliament on her own and held her sign and communicated the way she communicates. For whatever reason, right, that has incredibly ignited. So, you know, it's sort of a chicken egg thing. Yes, maybe for some people, hope is the way. Maybe for some people, pessimism is the way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for some people, like honesty or what they see as honesty is the way. But for whatever reason, her way, which I feel like she just started with her way, galvanized a very large group of people.
Did you see the piece of video that went viral of her standing there in the UN and then Donald Trump walks by? My theory is this is entirely a Rorschach test because she had this stern look on her face and then through camera moves. So let's examine the syntax of that video moment. Through camera moves, then we see Trump. But I think she looks like that all the time. And if anyone in the world had walked in the frame, she'd still look like that.
It's interesting. I was a little unsure how to feel about that viral clip because I think this is not hopefully a political comment per se, but it seems like our president, you know, enjoys the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt a little like he was getting in on that a little bit. I assume he didn't do that on purpose, but our president used to be on a reality TV show. It concerns me when the framing is a feud, when he's in a feud.
Right, right.
So, obviously it gave her more exposure, but I was a little uneasy.
I think that if you cut that video with different kinds of music, like if you put the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme to it, mm-hmm. it would mean something.
Yeah.
And if you put the Exorcist theme to it, it would mean something else. Yeah.
I'm still not sure. We'll see. Yeah.
Back to the idea of hope. Kate Mann, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, who is a writer and philosopher at Cornell, wrote about the how dare you ask us for hope. She said, giving hope, whatever the grim truth of the matter, is a feminine-coded pseudo-obligation that is far too seldom questioned. Good for Greta Thunberg, as usual, for resisting it. And my comment was, is she resisting it or do social niceties just not occur to her?
I'd say the latter.
Yeah.
She's welcome to interpret that, you know, under her rubric
mm-hmm.
or any of us. But yeah, I don't think she's, I mean, she might be. I don't know, you know, who am I to say? But, you know, I don't necessarily push back, maybe except for the viral clip with the feud with President Trump. She's out there in the public sphere. So if people want to read things into her or sort of platform her, fine. Personally, I'm just like, just don't personalize it in a way that's toxic,
right,
or abusive,
right,
you know, and in good faith.
I agree with that, and not only in this instance, but as a guiding principle for all interactions, those
yeah,
three things you said.
I think so.
Yeah. And also, I do think that there is something to her appeal that is, if you want to interpret it this way, you can. If you don't, you can't. She is not an empty vessel because she has a lot of facts and she presents well, but she does offer people the opportunity to do that because the clarity of the message, there's not a lot of other things to get caught up in. Maybe with AOC there is. You know, she's a politician. Mm-hmm. She's got to mm-hmm. be working right. a bunch of different angles. So Greta is this very clear voice who says this very clear thing and doesn't really go outside that clear thing. Like you said, she doesn't even endorse
right.
plans.
She doesn't
endorse politicians. So she becomes a little bit of a Rorschach mm-hmm. test or something that you could put your own interpretations into. And it's useful, I think, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the activist community, the advocacy community, the media community, particularly, you know, in this era, a lot depends on your theory of change. How do you think society changes, right? And again, I think she's a catalyst for a certain kind of change or a certain group of people. And what I appreciate about her as maybe a little bit of a wonkish climate person is that message. You know, she says,
"The main solution, however, is so simple that even a small child can understand it. We have to stop the emissions of greenhouse gases."
She just sort of gets to the basics over and over. Very basic. Obviously, also her presentation is very basic. So whoever she galvanizes, you know, Godspeed. And I don't know how much there's a counter galvanization. I don't know how much she galvanizes people who don't want to reduce emissions,
mm-hmm.
who have some vested interest in the status quo that might not be so great long term. I don't know. So there's always that consideration.
What do you think the most compelling theory of change is?
Oh, that's, I mean, the jury is out. And I get very confused, to be honest. I look like the Green New Deal is confused. Yeah, was very confusing to me. I read this Paul Krugman op-ed, and he called it a Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. Sort of talking about how politically it, you know, to me, it's sort of a heart, the Green New Deal, right? Again, it's salient for a certain group of people. It uses the keywords that rile them up. It has proposals that certain people are really into, and it works for them. Again, I always wonder, does that create a counter effect, a counter galvanization? Personally, you know, if I were, I would not be probably a good politician because I'm not so good at that kind of Christmas tree theory of change. That's kind of this big speech, you know, exciting slogans. And again, not to denigrate, for some people that really works. For some people, that's their skill and talent. So I don't know. I get very, I think about it a lot. I don't know what really works. Sometimes it might just be something really horrible, like a war.
Yeah.
Horrible environmental degradation.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I've looked at some of the proposals either in or associated with the Green New Deal. And this is just my training as a journalist and the way I navigate the world. I say that's none of the experts say that's going to be possible. And so it makes me a little suspicious and resentful of the whole
thing. But, you know, some people would say it's an Overton window. It opens up
they would
the
say
conversation.
That. Yeah. I personally reject that theory of change.
Yeah. Right.
The question
that's
is, does that theory of change work for other people? People who most advocate for the Overton window are the people who really most often want the most extreme policies, right? It happens to fit in exactly with what they want, right? So then they have the fallback plan. Look, I want us to totally and 100% eliminate, go to net zero emissions by 2030. But the Green New Deal doesn't have that level of realism, so it makes me question it. Someone who buys into the Overton window theory of change will say, well, what's the problem? The worst case scenario is we try to do it and almost get there. I don't know. I think that it calls into question their A, credibility, and B, I worry that it might turn people off who would otherwise be on board. And then a lot of the other programs, which I understand their point. If we don't have, if green jobs aren't at good wages, it's not going to work as well as if they are. And yet I say, okay, so instead of one big ask on the environment, now you're asking for a big ask on the environment and for unions and for housing. It gets harder to pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, obviously geniuses think about this all day long. Like Nobel Prize winners think about this all day long. You know, and I feel like I'll try to look at it with Greta Thunberg as a lens. You know, I'll look at some of these theories to try to figure out my interpretation of what she's doing. But even that's very personal. So,
Katie Lederer writes about climate and other things for N Plus One. She writes for the New York Times. She writes for herself. She writes for humanity. Katie, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for the Saturday show. It was Corey Wara and Joel Patterson, the Quaint Mallards, combining on the production. And we will talk to you on Monday.